The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are that of the hosts and represent no other individual, organisation or entity. I'm Roger.
And I'm Adam, and as you can probably tell, we're coming at you in person this evening, and it is the 23rd of September. The nights are closing in now. We're headed towards winter. Talking about winter, I was using this web chat GPT. It was OpenAI, similar to ChatGPT, combines them, and it actually predicted a cool, dry winter. I don't think that's correct. I think it's going to be a wet, windy and stormy winter, but they're just my predictions. I don't know what yours are. You probably don't have a clue about weather, so...
No, I don't have a clue, and I'm not that fussed. For me, this winter's just going to be about keeping my head down and getting through it.
Yes.
I certainly enjoy it being a lot cooler.
Yeah, and like I say, you managed to cope with snow last year anyway, so it wasn't a big issue, was it?
No, I'm still hoping for a few days out with my family, particularly in October, when I get 2 weeks off for half term.
Yeah, the October break's not nice, isn't it? Especially if you get 2 weeks.
And this is the best time of year for me, because it's not too hot, not too cold. We still get to see a little bit of sunlight. Once the clocks go back, that'll be a bit better.
Quite a lot of conkers when I went to Horton Park this morning, I noticed.
So good time to go conquering. So the podcast you're listening to is Weather Watch with Roger and Adam. No, it is not. It is Break the News. Adam and I get together every week to talk about the news and just have some fun, really. We record it, do a bit of editing on it, and bung it up on the internet for your delight.
Yes, so like I say, it'll probably be going out probably on Monday, or maybe tomorrow if I'm quick, but it'll all depend on how quick I am at editing. Like I say, it's probably no rush because I'm off Monday, as usual, and I do have some disappointing news. I applied for literally the simplest job out there at Aldi. I got to the interview stage, and I thought the interview went quite well. But, yeah, I got rejected.
I wouldn't get too discouraged, Adam, because the big retailers get a lot of applicants. And often they'll just bin applications without even looking at them if they see
but
things like...
I didn't get binned straight away. I got to the interview. I had an interview on Friday. So at least I got somewhere.
They do a lot of interviews too. If they see something like, oh, he's got no retail experience, this other candidate has, you know, you're done.
Yeah, which I didn't have any retail experience, so probably explains it. But I guess the reason I'd rather work at a big company, but I guess you've got to start off at small companies, to be honest, haven't you? Because big companies are ideal, because at least you know that they're going to oblige by all the laws. At least you know you're going to get full pay, you're going to get pension, etc. Whereas a small company, you don't know what you're really in for, do you?
I wonder which Aldi you'd have been working at.
The one at Clayton down there.
Oh, that one.
Oh. It won't great hours anywhere, so...
No, but it's...
It's very local, which is good.
And quite a nice place to work as well. You've got the Sue Ryder Centre and reasonable pub next to it. And Greg's.
Yes.
It's a nice little nook, that centre. Mm. Ah, well. Better opportunities will come for you, Adam.
But like I say, I'm currently working at a job. Well, I don't even know if you'd call it a job if you're only going to get about a shift or two a week or non-shift some weeks, so yeah.
I better not say what I think in case I got you in trouble with your employer, Adam. I never want to do that.
The employers won't even check on you anywhere.
If you are listening and you have got a complaint...
Yeah, and if you are Adam's employer, please get in touch.
At breakthenewspod@gmail.com. If you want us to share a certain piece of news or have something to say or want to engage with the podcast, that's the way to do it. Email us.
Yes, definitely. Had a lot of news, and we started talking about weather, park runs, but we never actually got onto my time. So I did get a PB today, not a PB overall, but PB at Horton Park, and I got 20.02. Not quite under 20, I'm still above 20 at Horton Park, and I've done a lot of park runs there. But I must say, it's tough to get that time. I felt really shattered. And yes, obviously we scanned the barcodes at the end. And I was like trying to bending over and everything. It does take a lot out of you, doesn't it, running? I enjoy it, of course. Although I actually prefer going for slower jogs more than fast running, but it is what it is. I enjoy competing for the times, so that's the reason why I do it, really. But like I say, I love going for like my slow runs, should we say. Yeah, I love going for them, and I did 12 and a half miles on Sunday last week.
That probably explains why you did so well at the park run as well. You've worked on it.
Yeah, I'm not going to go for a run on Sunday, but I'll go for one on Monday because I know I ain't got a shift on Monday. I usually go on Monday. I ain't got a shift. But yeah, I'll go on Monday because I've just been for one today. But like I say, yeah, hopefully I might try and see if I can do 13 miles.
Wow, that is quite a long running distance. And round here in Bradford's geography is like it's a bowl, so you're either going uphill or downhill in
but
Bradford.
You don't have to go into Bradford, do you, to run? I can run over that way, I can run over that way. I don't have to go into the city centre. That is the first time I've ever actually run into the city centre.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Your last run you did, and that's a heck of a hill on the way home, so well done.
I ran into Halifax a few weeks ago, though.
And again, there's a heck of a hill from Halifax on
way. Yeah, I went that way, but yeah, I went a slightly longer way, but yeah, probably did 11 point something miles there or something, but yeah.
There's that vast crater near Shibden where you go up as you're leaving Halifax, then you go down again, and then you have to go up again.
I didn't actually go that way, though. I went a slightly different way because I mapped it out before I went. So rather than going straight through to Shelburne North Arham, I actually went down the other way, which signpost leads, and I went towards Hipperholme, and then I went up, and I think I did a bit longer, a bit further up as well, so I actually made it even longer.
Wow.
So, like I said, I'm running very long distances.
And you have some nice options for running round here, because you could go up into Halifax and the Calder Valley, or you can go into Bronte Country or round Shibden Park.
Yeah, you can go into the countryside, you can go into the city, you name it. Well, go wherever you want, practically. There's advantages and disadvantages to them both. Sometimes country roads can be dangerous, though. They don't all have a footpath, so you've got to be very careful on some country roads. It all depends on the road. Sometimes you have to move sides, which I did when I was moving down on the bit where I was coming down towards Farnham. Not that Farnham Road, but the bit before there between Queensborough, because you head down towards Denham. Some of that's just got path at one side and you've got to cross over, etc. Just it can be awkward. So country roads are not always ideal. But then if you go into the city, you end up with lots of busy traffic, etc. So, yeah, it's like you can't win. But wherever you are, you've got to keep an eye out for traffic, I guess. If you're not familiar with the direction, you've got to be very careful because you don't want to get lost when you're out running because you could end up going for miles.
Well, get in those nice long runs while you can, Adam, before winter sets in.
Yes, and I'm going to try and continue throughout winter, even if it's raining. I ran in the rain on Wednesday, and yeah, it was a very wet Wednesday morning, wet and windy, and I ran through it.
And that's more weathercast and more runcast, but...
Well, we're like nearly 10 minutes into the podcast, and I don't think we've got through the news. So I think we best start getting through the news, because otherwise I'm going to be giving myself a very big editing job.
And we've been debating our number one news article on WhatsApp quite a lot this week, haven't we, Adam?
A lot. And
I have a few things to say about this.
I personally, before we go into it, I personally thought Rishi Sunak was going to really please the electorate, and I thought he'd done a really good job. But from what I've seen, polls are pretty static and his approval rating's gone down worse, so it's not gone down very well. So let's get into
it. So for once, I might have got it right, but we'll see.
Yes, I think you have. Rishi Sunak delays ban on new petrol and diesel cars, faces criticism for changes to green policies. The Prime Minister announces exemptions and delays, increases cash incentives for gas boiler replacements. Opposition and industry bosses criticise the move. Changes aim to create dividing lines with opposition ahead of expected general election next year. Key changes include delays in bans on car sales and fossil fuel heating and increased grants for boiler upgrades. Labour commits to keeping the 2030 ban, which obviously has been moved back to 2035 on some stuff by Rishi Sunak, on petrol and diesel car sales, criticises UK's move away from global consensus, Industry reactions are mixed, and the UK international climate leadership was questioned at the UN summit. Critics say changes make it harder to achieve climate goals. Some in Sunak's party support the new approach as more aligned with public sentiment. There were also some that didn't like Boris Johnson. Like I said, it was a very long article off ChatGPT. It's not done an excellent job here, but like I said, we get the basic idea. Practically, some of the stuff has been moved back, and there was something in the news that something else had been quietly dropped that BBC noticed today. So it does appear that Rishi Sunak is trying to save us some money here, doesn't it?
Rishi's speech was 50% meaningless soundbites, 20% self-praise and 30% lies. For example, he said that he's putting a stop to taxes for meat eaters. What tax? It never existed. He saved us from being forced to rip out our boilers by cancelling a ban. What ban? It never existed. There never was a boiler ban.
There was talk about that, though.
There was talk about it, but there's talk of the earth boiling, and that's not happened yet, neither. He said that he saved Britain from an imaginary recycling hell with 7 recycling bins. Who's got 7 recycling bins?
I think one council might have done that.
I've got 3. This policy never existed. And furthermore, if you find recycling confusing, what are you running the country for? They lie further with their narrative of, oh, it's not our economic idiocy that's hurting your wallet. No, it's climate change. Climate change is increasing your bills. Net zero is crashing the economy. Oh, really? Because I've been looking up where some of the money's going, Adam. Rwanda policy, 120 million. Test and trace, 37 billion. Barges, 1.6 billion. Fraud waste, 26 billion. Liz Truss's mini budget, 30 billion, but no. It's your loft insulation and your car and your untaxed sausages that are crashing the economy, isn't it, Adam? It couldn't possibly be the 100 billion they're spending on HS2, could it?
Well, they're actually talk about rolling back HS2 now and not actually completing it. So it looks like Rishi Sunak is trying to save us some money. But yes, definitely been mistakes made in the past. And I'm not quite sure Liz Truss was necessarily a massive loss. I don't know where those figures came from over Liz Truss, but like I said, there has been a lot of mistakes, and I don't think a lot of people believe a word Rishi Sunak says.
I can cite my sources on those figures, Adam, don't you worry, mate.
Yeah, but GB News thought that Liz Truss's budget were quite good. And if you look at what the economic editors and stuff and some presenters have been saying, people thought Liz Truss's budget was actually quite good.
But it cost us 30 billion because it never happened.
That's true, and that was a waste, wasn't it? It went back and forth, so you could be right there. But in terms of the other stuff, I do think the policies are probably a step in the right direction, but people are not going to believe a word Rishi Sunak says because of what he's done with Boris Johnson, and they see the Conservatives as very untrustworthy now anyway, don't they?
Well, if this really was about helping hard-working families with the energy costs, I ask, what took you so long? Because they've been screwing us sideways for the past 13 years. No, they're not doing it because they believe in it, Adam. They're doing it because they think it will win them votes. And they're mistaken. You know, but they're throwing crumbs of bread to us like the verminous pigeons that they think we are.
Do you think that they're just trying anything now because they know they've lost the next general election and they're seeing if they can win back some support?
Yeah, because it doesn't matter, because whatever policy they put in, they either won't be in government to implement it, or they can just change the goalposts anyway. So I pray it's the former and they're not in government to try any of this. It's ridiculous. They're annoyed.
Do you think they're practically playing with the country now just to win votes?
Oh, yeah. They think the country is their plaything. And let's see what we can tease them with and suggest and see if that wins us a few votes. But they know they're not going to win.
Yeah, they're probably not. And I thought this would go down quite well. I thought they might end up clawing back support, but because the polls have stayed pretty static, I'm now very unconvinced that they're going to win back support. And I've literally changed my mind because I've seen the polls, and whatever Rishi Sunak says, regardless of what it is, don't seem to win back support from it. So I don't know what he can really do to win back support. I mean, when the debates are on, they might claw back a bit of support, but even so, people so delusioned from politics that they're not even going to pay much attention to it anyway. That's what it seems like.
It's because his speech was all style and no substance. It got a very positive, immediate reaction, especially from the right-leaning media. But once it actually gets scrutinised and looked at, then you can see through the lies and the manipulation that's going on there. But fortunately, people aren't quite as thick as Rishi thinks.
But Keir Starmer's come out with quite a bit of stuff in the past week as well.
Oh, yeah, he thinks we're a load of ignorant plebs as well.
He's going to try and bring us back into the EU, align policies back with Europe. He's going to change how we deal with migration, so we'd basically be taking some of their migrants, but he'd be trying to send some of them into Europe, which is all not going to work, and the EU are not going to agree to take back ours unless we give them migrants, because why would they want them all? So Keir Starmer seems to be taking people for fools as well, so it looks like Keir Starmer's also going to be a problem.
Absolutely, it's two turds.
So what do we do now then?
Revolt.
Because we're not going to get a good government, are we?
Very, very unlikely. We'll get the government we deserve,
but,
unfortunately.
Like I say, I do think I prefer Rishi Sunak than Keir Starmer, probably just because of the policies. I think he's got a bit more common sense than Keir Starmer. Obviously, Keir Starmer wants to let Brussels continue to rule us, and although a lot of people think they've made the wrong decision now about the EU, I do think a lot of people think it's gone badly because of the cost of living crisis more than anything, and I think that's affected people a heck of a lot more.
And it still feels that there's no end to the cost of living crisis in sight. I mean, it's been a good week, but one good week does not negate a year of misery. And there's probably at least another year of misery ahead.
Possibly worse if we enter a recession, which some of the signals are suggesting, that could make things worse. And I think that's probably the reason why the Bank of England have decided to freeze interest rates after 14 consecutive rises. So UK interest rates remain unchanged at 5.25%, the highest in 15 years. The Bank of England cites a faster-than-expected slowdown in price rises. Bank Governor emphasises the need to continue efforts to lower inflation to the 2% target. Homeowners will be relieved, but uncertainty remains, especially for those with upcoming mortgage rate changes. Monetary Policy Committee MPC were divided and ultimately decided to pause rate hike due to easing inflation. I just want to expand on that. 5% voted for the freeze, whereas 4% voted for a 0.25% rise, so very divided there. Concerns linger about the impact of rate hikes on household spending and economic growth. And inflation drops to 6.7% in August, and that's down from 6.8%. But challenges persist, including rising unemployment and weaker economic growth. And the MPC suggests rates should stay sufficiently restrictive to meet the 2% inflation target, likely by 2025. Now, can you wait until 2025 to get to 2%?
It depends what my mortgage provider decides to do.
But that's 2% inflation. But I mean, even so, I think it is going to come down faster. We might see it go up a little bit. But even with oil prices rising, we still saw inflation come down very, very slightly in the last month, which to me suggests that an incoming recession is actually damping costs down more than what the oil prices are rising them. So I do think that the interest rates are having a big effect on inflation at reducing it. Do you think the interest rates are having a massive impact on reducing inflation?
I don't see much evidence of it so far. Prices haven't soared this month, fortunately. So I suppose that is a bit of a sign, but other stuff is still going up. Fuel is still going up. So it's not enough yet. Yeah. 1 month off, millions of people having to be terrified over their mortgage rate increasing is not enough.
Yeah, well, that was August, and obviously next month it's going to be September. So if they're not rising as much, it is promising. But like I say. Will it continue? Who knows? I mean, it does appear that it probably will continue, because if as we enter recession, we're seeing unemployment rising out west. So even though they're saying that we're not technically in recession yet, despite GDP falling slightly in the last month, we're still not technically in a recession until it falls two consecutive quarters. We're still in a growth phase. But like I say, once a recession starts, I think that inflation is going to come down a lot faster than what many people expect. But if a recession does happen, then to promote economic growth again, they're going to have to probably lower interest rates.
And then maybe Rishi could stand a chance.
But can you stand a chance of winning an election if there's a recession? Look what happened in 2008 with the financial crisis. It put Labour out of power.
Yeah,
for many years, actually.
Yeah, the cycle's not going to resolve itself fast enough for him, is it?
No, so he's going to be out of power. If a recession does happen, it's going to be a disaster. If the cost of living crisis continues, it's going to be a disaster. So either way, he's not going to be able to win. His debates might help him claw back a bit of support when people see how stupid Keir Starmer is, but I still don't think it'll claw back enough support if people are not going to pay attention to his policies. I thought Rishi Sunak were doing a good job at campaigning. I thought he was a campaigner, but like I say, he's not convincing people, and people are clearly not as stupid as what the Conservatives probably thought they were.
You've got that all spot on there, Adam. All I have to add is just personally, I'm very pleased with my mortgage provider because they have allowed me to stay on a fixed mortgage and they haven't changed my payments for another year. With interest rates going up, I expected them to, but fortunately they've been very reasonable. Maybe that's because for the last 15 years or whatever, you know, I've always paid my mortgage on time.
Good. Yeah, that help. And yeah, we'll just have to wait and see what happens. But like I say, it does look to be more positive news now. But something which is not positive and another indicator of a recession is how insolvencies have increased. So in the UK, businesses are facing a decline due to a significant increase in company insolvencies last month. Recent insolvency service data reveals a 33.6% surge in company bankruptcies to 2,308 in August compared to July. Nikki Fisher, president of R3, the UK's insolvency and restructuring trade body, mentioned that various factors like long-term economic issues, director fatigue and creditor pressure are pushing more companies into insolvency processes to resolve financial issues or close down. Creditors' involuntary liquidations remain high as more directors opt to wind down their firms. Compulsory liquidation numbers also reached a four-year high in August, reflecting creditors' pursuit of owed money. Fisher emphasised that businesses are facing multiple challenges, including cost inflation, and many are seeking specialist help to survive or considering options like sale or liquidation. James Burgess, head of commercial at Attridish UK, noted a substantial increase in claims for late or failed payments. Attridish UK reported a 26% rise in such claims in quarter two of 2023 compared to the same period in 2022, and a significant 165% increase compared to quarter two in 2021. Despite this, Burgess highlighted a potential improvement, citing a 4.1% increase in August retail sales. However, he cautioned that businesses need to remain vigilant and acknowledge insolvency risks, particularly if interest rates increase. Burgess suggested that a drop in interest rates could help businesses, and Attridish predicts a gradual decrease in interest rates, potentially benefiting businesses and resulting in a triple lock effect. He emphasised that the fall of supply chains and late payments can trigger insolvency, urging firms to pay attention to warning signs and maintain robust financial insights and forecasts. Globally, company insolvencies are rising, affecting countries like Germany and France due to slow and stagnant economic growth. Fisher's message to directors is to be alert to signs of financial distress in their businesses and seek advice promptly if they observe problems in wages, staff or suppliers, excess stock or overall financial worries. What do you make of that, Roger? So insolvencies are increasing rapidly.
So for our less financially au fait listeners, insolvency is when a company doesn't have the cash flow to keep going and pay its costs, isn't it?
Yes.
So then they have to start selling up, liquidating. All right, fair enough. Yeah. I've got that. It's not a great time own a business that isn't in the top 1%.
We have seen some big businesses fall, like Wilco, although I know it's been bought out by other firms or parts of it have, but not the whole business. And like I say, businesses are failing, like they are doing, then it affects employment, it affects the general economy in general because there's less people with money coming in, so less money to spend, so it has a knock-on effect on everything else as well. So it's not a good look with the economy at the moment, is it?
See, I've seen three or four financial crises in my lifetime now, Adam, and one of the first signs is always when big retail businesses start going, then you start seeing the banks and financial sector getting affected.
Yes, and just escalate within probably about space of a few months or years or whatever, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like I know the last one lasted from about 2007 to about 2009, but it took a while for growth to get back again, and they had to keep interest rates very low for so long. So, like I say, I do see them hammering down interest rates soon. But obviously, that won't happen until they start seeing banks failing. Banks are being much more cautious than what they were back in the last financial crisis, so that might not necessarily happen. But if people can't afford the mortgages and they lose their jobs, then there is a little bit of a problem because then they have to be forced to sell the properties. And then when there's more properties for sale, it means there's more supply. Less people can afford a house, so there's less demand. So there's a supply and demand issue there, and that puts a downward pressure on the housing market. And then that means that even if banks have to get the homes back, they can't sell them for as high price as what they would like because the value of it's dropped. So then banks end up being in trouble. So even though it may not be as bad with the lending, if there is a housing crash, it will inevitably affect the banks, unfortunately, then. But obviously, it'll all just depend. But banks are making a lot of money from interest rate rises anyway, so that'll probably outcompete what they're going to lose there. But like I say, if the financial sector does collapse, then that's when the Bank of England will have to slash interest rates.
The next few months will tell the tale.
Yeah, and we'll be able to see what happens. So give it another few months, we'll probably have a better idea of where we are and whether a recession is actually happening or not.
If I wanted to own a business right now, it would definitely be an energy company.
That is true. Energy companies are making an awful lot of profits. Gas prices are still relatively elevated. And oil prices are still through the roof. And oil prices are actually rising quite rapidly again.
And with winter coming up, people are starting to wonder now about those winter fuel bills and what's going to happen. Yeah. And our magnificent leaders are starting to debate and mutter about what help they might be giving us. Will it be as effective as the last piece of help they gave us, where they basically just chucked taxpayers' money at the energy companies and said, we'll pay it all? Well, a group of MPs is urging immediate action to assist vulnerable households. That's an important word there, vulnerable households. So maybe not everyone. Facing a looming winter energy crisis due to escalating energy bills and financial strain. They're calling on government regulator Ofgem, and energy suppliers to provide urgent support. Last year, significant money was provided. No insulation or heat pumps were provided or solar panels, were there?
No.
But concerns were raised about the absence of new aid announcements for the upcoming winter. The MPs highlighted unallocated support from the previous year, emphasising the need to ensure eligible households receive assistance. They also advocated for extended aid schemes and better support for vulnerable customers. The MPs emphasised the necessity of addressing standing charges in energy bills. The industry group Energy UK emphasised increased support offered to customers during challenging times. Ofgem stressed their priority of customer protection and supplier responsibility in identifying and supporting struggling customers. Energy prices are currently capped, but government support has been reduced compared to the previous year. The Department for Energy Security and Net Zero emphasised existing support measures and guaranteed protection until April next year. Additionally, a new law will be introduced to set time limits on social landlords for necessary repairs to ensure safe living conditions. What do you think, Adam?
Well, I think there's going to be some support. I know the cost of living payment has been announced at the most vulnerable, £300. And I think an election's coming up, so don't forget, they might want to give away a bit of support perhaps there, because they'll want to win some voters for election, won't they?
Yes, but it's more of what my mate Keir calls sticking plaster politics. Just throwing money at the energy companies isn't solving the problem.
Or throwing money at people. Nigel Farage called it helicopter money, where Rishi Sunak dished out random bits of money.
Yeah, and it's a great way of putting it. Instead, invest in people. Let people invest in their homes. You know, the amount they've spent, I bet every house could have a little mini wind turbine right now. That'd probably take a few percent off everyone's bill.
Yeah, but instead, the money's just been dropped from a helicopter, hasn't it?
Well, it's not just been dropped on a helicopter, it's been dropped onto the energy companies. We haven't seen a penny of it, really. It goes in our bank accounts, sure. The ill-informed among us probably waste it on garbage and then end up in debt, so then the banks benefit.
That's true, yeah.
But it's mostly allocated to the energy companies, this money. That's what it's supposed to be for. So it's a nonsense. It's a waste of time. And if they were actually serious about helping people, they wouldn't help people by giving us a fish. They'd give us a fishing rod. They'd invest.
So do you think tax cuts are a better solution than...
Slightly better. Especially if the money they get on tax is just being wasted like this.
Yeah, because Liz Truss's idea was to lower taxes, wasn't it? But that did not go down very well. But I think that's because she mostly lowered taxes for the rich rather than the poor.
You've got it spot on there, Adam. Yep.
Yeah, they wanted the taxes lowered for the poor, not the rich. If it had been the poor taxes that had been lowered, maybe it wouldn't have been as controversial. But because she lowered taxes for the rich, it came across as very controversial, didn't it?
That's why it didn't win any favour with me. I was listening back to our Liz Truss podcast just a couple of weeks ago, and yeah.
If it had been the lower bracket of tax that would be scrapped, which would have been unaffordable because everyone bears it anyway, if it had been that bracket, that might have been a lot more popular.
It could have been. But they don't care about people. They don't care about investing in people. They don't care long term. They're just taking it day by day, policy by policy.
Even HS2's now getting scrapped. Like I said, they've done so much work. It's mostly the southern part of the country that's been built, and it's not actually going to speed up journey times there, from what I've heard. So that's ended up being a waste. But we've got to remember, Labour did start the project when they were in power, but the Conservatives have just always agreed to continue it.
Well, it's a bit like the Rack Concrete scandal, which I'll talk about in my next article. Labour have said it's been a colossal shambles, but it was the Labour government who put the Rack Concrete in there in the first place, so they can't talk.
It's Labour and Conservatives. It's been across both of them, so...
It really is like comparing two turds. It's really disheartening at the moment.
So who are we supposed to vote for if they're both bad?
Ask me in May or whenever the elections are.
We don't even know when the next general election is. It can be as late as the end of January 2025 from the stuff that I've researched.
Oh God, I'm going to get even more depressed.
Do you think they'll leave it as late as possible? Do you think they'll have it in May, or do you think they'll have it some other time?
I'm thinking May at the moment.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
along with the local elections.
That would make sense to me, at least.
Well, they quite often do it along with the local elections. They did it in 2015 along with them, and 2010 along with them. So.
At least that might save us a teeny bit of taxpayers' money.
So you want May on the same day you're hoping for, then?
Yeah, because that makes the most sense to me.
Yes, it does.
But to be honest, I'd want it tomorrow. start holding these scumbags to account.
I think the same as you. I think May's a sensible option, but I'm not sure if it's going to happen because I think they may want to stick out the time as much as possible to try and make changes. So it might be after then because they're not going to call an election if they're going to lose badly.
Well, they are going to lose badly anyway, thanks to cretins like Gillian Keegan, who has shown how in touch with her job she is. Downing Street has had to defend her this week after she said some pupils in schools with crumbling concrete actually preferred their temporary classrooms. Rishi Sunak's spokesman said that Gillian was reflecting a conversation with children and has his full confidence. New figures show 174 schools in England have reinforced aerated concrete, RAC, and responding to an urgent question in the House of Commons earlier, Ms Keegan said, "I have been to a number of these schools, and in fact, at the first school I went to, the children were all petitioning me to stay in the porta cabin because they actually preferred it to the classroom." Asked why Mr Sunak still had confidence in Ms Keegan, his spokesman said, "The department have said she is leading and has worked hard in recent weeks to make sure that, for the vast majority of children, their education has been unaffected by this challenge." Labour's shadow education secretary, Bridget Phillipson, meanwhile, said the RAC crisis had been a colossal shambles. And she's right, but it's a shambles her party caused, so I'm not interested in that. What I am interested in is what you think here, Adam. Do you think Gillian Keegan is talking sense?
Well, she might have just said what the pupils at the school had told her.
And do you think that she should base her policy on the testimony of one group of 10-year-olds?
Well, children don't vote at an election, so probably not a good idea, because obviously their brains are not developed as well. Maybe speaking to teachers might be better, but I don't personally think she was planning policy on this. I think she was just telling the House of Commons what they'd said.
How can an education secretary who is supposed to represent and look after the interests of the education industry and the people who work in it just side with the kids like this when the kids say something as ridiculous as, "We love the porta cabins, Miss Keegan, please can they stay?"
Which she was in it for her defence.
I think Gillian Keegan thinks our kids want their playgrounds to just be full of porta cabins and to demolish their old schools. And to be honest, a lot of 10-year-olds probably would say they want that. But then ask a 10-year-old if they think having Haribo as a bedtime snack is a good idea, and most of them will say yeah. Kids don't know what kids want because they're kids. So the fact that she has raised this in Parliament just makes her look like a complete idiot.
Yeah, I think it may not have gone down very well. I didn't actually see this bit of news, surprisingly enough, so it hasn't clearly gone that far, but I just think she was just telling the House of Commons what the kids really thought. I don't think it meant to implement policy, although she was probably using it as her own defence, really, because let's be honest, they'll defend themselves anyway, don't they?
Well, that's a bit like saying, if we know that NHS and dentist waiting lists are getting longer and longer. And that's a bit like saying, well, kids don't like going to dentist anyway, so this is a good thing. No, it isn't, you moron. Spend your breath and your time on saying something that is actually intelligent.
Yes, there's definitely mistakes. But she messed up a few weeks ago as well off camera, didn't she? Oh, what was supposed to be off camera.
Oh, yeah, she's the one who's just showed her true colours a little bit. But they're all probably like that behind cameras.
Do you think we've got a good education secretary at the moment? You're in education, so you may not be allowed to tell us, I'm not sure. But...
Oh, no, I'm allowed an opinion on the education secretary. No.
Do you think we've got one of the worst ones?
I haven't really compared our education system to much of the rest of the world. I know that at the moment our education system is favouring and implementing advice from America a lot, and that's the kind of system that we are trying to emulate. And I don't know if America is known as a bastion of educational excellence.
Whereabouts did you get that information from? Because I thought they were trying to make the education system world leading, not American.
You ask any trainee teacher what one of their key texts is and their key learning, and it's Doug Lemov's book, Teach Like a Champion. That's a philosophy that 90% of schools are implementing and they think is the bee's knees. And I certainly think it does have some excellence in it, in education, there's always different ways. And every 5 or 6 years in education, you know, there's a new thing, a new way of doing things. It goes in cycles.
Yeah, there's always ideas coming out. But what I don't like about the American education system is it's got an awful lot of wokery in it.
I haven't seen much of that in...
But that could be just the teachers that are left-wing.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that is disappointing. But what you hear of the education system in the media is very foreign to me as well, though. I see things being portrayed, like when they say, like, teachers are teaching children about masturbation and turning them trans and turning them gay. And that's foreign to me. I've never seen anything like
that. There has been talk about education in the past week. For example, they're going to scrap A-levels and they're going to make it so that students are going to study maths and English until they're 18.
And that's probably quite a good idea, actually. Although I don't like the focus on maths so much that Rishi has got. I think young people should get more choice. But staying in education until you're 18 is good, I think.
Subjects till 18. Do you think that's better than A-levels or worse than A-levels?
About the same, I'd say. That's a tricky question. The core subjects are very important, but it's the other subjects that make education exciting.
Yeah, so we just have to see what happens. But do you have much hope with Labour in their education system?
Education always flourishes initially under Labour because they crank a lot of money into it, but then a lot of money gets wasted and it results in austere times like what we've got now.
Like I say, it may be good, it may be bad, so either way, it seems like our politics are very partisan, doesn't it?
Yeah, so I'm going to move on finally to something that isn't quite as political, but certainly to do with young people, and it's TikTok again.
We always go on about TikTok.
I like to go on about TikTok because the kids are really, really into it, and I'm trying to find some good in it, and I can't. And this week, a BBC investigation revealed that TikTok frenzies, which we've mentioned here on the podcast before, they are causing a strain on public services, particularly police and schools, as they lead to antisocial behaviour and interference with ongoing investigations. TikTok's algorithm, by recommending unusual content to users, incites them to create similar videos, resulting in disruptive trends. The investigation highlighted cases where TikTok's disproportionate engagement led to interference in a missing person case and school vandalism. Police and teachers' unions expressed concern over the impact on behaviour, emphasising the need for the online safety bill to hold social media platforms accountable. TikTok defends its safety measures and denies direct responsibility for such disruptions. Of course they do. The BBC found 4 recent examples, including public interference in the police investigation of Nicola Bulley's disappearance and school vandalism. The 2 other examples the BBC investigated were outside the UK. An online obsession with the murder of 4 students in the US state of Idaho that led to innocent people being falsely accused. And finally, the suggestion that TikTok fanned the flames of recent riots in France. Strange that this BBC investigation didn't also mention or look into the videos encouraging migrants and illegal migrants to come to our country, isn't it, Adam? What do you think?
Yeah, because that's what GB News have been talking about with TikTok. They've been talking about how smugglers are using it as a platform to promote their content on. So that's what the GB News have been talking about. But yeah, TikTok doesn't seem to be very well regulated, and that's probably why criminals and people are taking advantage of using it.
I'm really worried about 1 year's time when my daughter turns 13 and she'll probably end up using this thing. I mean, YouTube Shorts is bad enough at the moment.
Well, what's happening with that?
Well, basically, TikTok videos are being migrated over to YouTube Shorts, so that's becoming TikTok anyway.
It's on the same as TikTok, though, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's very alarming.
And the thing about it, on Shorts, it's really easy to rack up views as well.
Yeah. Well, my daughter was scrolling away today. Some nutter on one of these things dropped an F-bomb, so I had to lock her phone and give her a talking to and check all of her settings.
But it wasn't her fault, though, because it probably just scrolled past it.
Yeah, that's true. It's not her fault, but it's my fault for not having her settings harsh enough. But I know that she's going to hear F-bombs, though, and inappropriate content, but she's got to be careful because her sisters might be listening. And if she'd have put her headphones on, she'd have got away with it. I'd have never spotted it.
Yeah.
So the message is, especially to parents, you know, just watch what your kids are doing. And this report has highlighted that.
Yeah, and like I say, it's not ideal, but what more can we do? I know there's the online safety bill, which aims to hinder free speech as well as this. I know the online safety bill may have some good points, but it's also got some bad points.
Mm-hmm.
But then how do you define the distinction between harmful content and free speech? Mm-hmm. Which we have talked about on this podcast before.
The way that you distinguish it is through your own adult, mature objectivity. And adults should be protecting their children from what's online. It ultimately is the parents' responsibility.
But yeah, I do think TikTok has been used for some legal activities, but so have the other platforms, but TikTok seems to be the one that appears the most.
And for TikTok to just go out and say, oh, no, we're not a part of this, we're not enabling this, is just nonsense. But legally, they have to deny all responsibility, so I kind of get it. Yeah,
and it's probably they don't have enough staff moderating their content.
Or whatever AI they've got moderating their content isn't good enough. You and I had a long debate today about the intelligence of AI because you Googled my name, didn't you?
And mine.
Yeah, and the AI knew quite a lot about you, but it didn't know much about me, really.
Yeah, well, I actually Googled mine first, and yes, I thought that it knew a lot about me, and I thought I'd share it with you, and I thought I'd Google yours as well, so that I could share with you what yours thought, and yeah, it even thought you lived in BD12. Is that where your school is?
No.
No.
I have no links to the BD12 area.
So is that another Roger then? I think it works. I think it said Roger D something, didn't it?
Yeah, there are a few Roger my surnames out there. One of them was an ice cream man in America who was selling drugs to children. So that's not very good. But my Roger has a D in it because my dad misspelt my birth certificate. So that makes me a little bit more obscure.
Oh, so is that the reason why yours has a D in it?
It is, yeah, because my dad misspelt it.
You misspelt the name?
Yeah, when my dad was at the registry office. Because Roger does sound like it's got a D in it, so he stuck a D in it. As I was growing up, he did tell me, oh no, I put a D in it because the D is for David, which is my name. It makes you special. But then eventually when I was older, I was able to persuade him to tell me the truth, which was, yeah, he admitted, yeah, I just didn't know how to spell Roger.
And why didn't he get in touch with them and say, oh, I spelled it wrong and they might have corrected it?
It was all sorted. It was all, you know, in place by then. No point in changing it. And I quite like having something unique about my name. Roger's a terrible name anyway, so you might as well have something unique about it.
Like, well, it may not actually be a good thing, because if no one else has got a D, or very few people have got a D in it, then it makes your name easily very, very traceable.
So all the more reason to be careful about that digital footprint.
Yeah, because like I say, you've got a D, most people have only got a G.
And I am careful because working in education now, schools, as part of their recruitment, have to run Google and social media checks on you.
And do they have to run AI checks yet or not yet?
I think some schools do use AI as part of that process, yeah. I think schools tend to use external companies to do that now because, you know, it's one less job for them.
Which AI sometimes gets wrong anyway, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Which we've seen there. But like I say, it does actually provide quite a good accurate tool, except still thought that I was at BCB and the presenter there, which is obviously wrong, but I think that's probably down to the fact that some of my posts, social media posts have it, and obviously I'm still on the website, so yeah, I think that's the reason why.
As long as any website is recommending football to me, then I know that AI isn't that intelligent. Because anyone with a modicum of intelligence knows I hate football. So, yeah, technology, it's got its good sides, it's got its bad sides.
I'm still never going to probably be 100%, but I'm near enough.
Well, we're relying on technology to get this out there and for you to contact us and tell us what you think. So email us, if you can, at breakthenewspod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Yes, definitely. And be sure to share it with your family and friends. And yeah, we'll try to increase the listener content and keep it going. And please give us some feedback. We've been doing shorter episodes. I'm not sure if you're still listening to us at this point, but if you are, please be sure to give us feedback. So thank you everyone for listening. And it's goodbye from me.
And goodbye from me. Take care.